Thanks very much for taking time to talk with me today, Sybil.
Well, thank you. I'm really happy to be talking with you.
So I've been reading immigration essays. I got an advanced copy, and I've really been enjoying them. And I also found the introduction in which you talk about how the book came to be really interesting. And I wonder if you could share with our listeners a little bit about that, how the book formed.
It was definitely, in some ways, it was organic, but the way that organically happened was I got a grant, the Make Work grant, which is kind of Chattanooga-based, and it was to work with a press and write about Chattanooga's unheard voices. And so once I got that, and that was kind of it, and we had maybe proposed a much smaller project, but once I started delving into it, I started getting overwhelmed because I realized there's a lot of unheard voices in the world.
Right. Yeah.
And how could I do that? And so I started just almost kind of randomly with refugees, and because I have an interest in that, just because I lived abroad and just with traveling, I was kind of interested in that. And then I realized that I also knew the director. It was after when I contacted her, I realized that I knew her. And so she was able to put me in touch with people to interview. And that was how it started. And originally was going to be, the book was going to be interviews with the refugees. And then that just kept getting bigger because I started looking at their Chattanooga and my Chattanooga are very different. So I started looking at kind of gentrification and how different parts of our town are laid out. And then I started putting in some of my own personal experience. So that I lived in a gentrifying neighborhood, Martin Luther King, and how have I benefited from that? And how has that hurt some people? And so it just organically kept going from there. And then also because I travel a lot, I started bringing in some of my essays regarding traveling and some of the refugees I had semi-encountered in Turkey and some other places around there. So that was kind of how it grew out. And then also I started including my own family were slaveholders. So I started looking at race a bit more and kind of tracing my own families. Again, what is my responsibility or do I have one with a family that of a legacy of slavery? And if I do, what do I do about that? So those are some questions that I ask in the book.
All of them are really fascinating. I like that it has a mix of very personal things and then the kind of more interview based essays that you've done too. Was it difficult to cull it down at the end? I mean, it sounds overwhelming just as you sort of describe it in the introduction.
Right. And so, I mean, that could be a lifelong project.
Right.
And in fact, I'm already in my head, I'm thinking about another book that would be kind of to explore those in a deeper way. But because this one actually it was because it was supposed to be a small project, I was really trying to not let it get too big. And so actually I didn't have to really cull anything. It was more like, oh, I need an essay about kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I need an essay looking at maybe me living in MLK, what might that be? And I like to write an essay about people that I've met in Turkey. And so how might that, so that was more, it was more of like what I felt like I might need. And then some of the other essays, some are a little bit more, not academic, but literary in the sense that I'm looking at, Jane Eyre and looking at things like expatriate and wandering. And that was another kind of part that I just, as it evolved, I said, yeah, I'd like to include those and write a bit more about that. But the topic is so huge and exhaustible, but for this book, it's pretty compact, as you know.
Yeah. So would you care to read an excerpt from the book for us?
Sure.
Great.
I'm just going to read a little, and it's from the first essay called Schemers, and it's very close to the beginning of the essay, and I'll just read a little passage from that.
Okay.
We were schemers, my husband Roan and I. I suspect it came from our expatriate lifestyle and soul, where we met, and our desire to see a world beyond the one we knew. The more you see of the world, the more precarious it all seems. Roan, whose family had immigrated from South Africa to Canada, and subsequently, through bad luck and bad decisions, had lost all of their money, felt the precariousness of the world even more deeply than I did. Until I'd moved to South Korea in 1995, my life had been solidly and predictably American white middle class. But my parents had grown up under the cloud of the Depression, and our family did not waste. My mom reused the brown paper bags my dad carried his lunch in to work. My dad carpeted our house, installed cabinets, and worked on our ever-aging cars. We had a garden. We canned tomatoes and beans we didn't eat. Even when he no longer needed to, my dad would make a meal of the samples offered at the grocery store. He went to retirement investment seminars simply for the free steak dinners. My dad was raised in subsistence-level poverty, working on the family's small cotton farm in Possum Valley, Arkansas. While in the Navy in the early 50s, he'd seen dead bodies in the gutters of pre-Maoist China and children begging along the streets of Manila. Traveling through Mongolia, Cambodia, and Indonesia, I'd witnessed countries in extreme poverty and upheaval, countries that had once been empires. One day, perhaps in our lifetime, our civilization too would fall. Ron and I thought that if we planned properly, we might be able to survive the collapse. Often at night in our tiny apartment in Seoul, after a drink or two, we'd come up with some cramped, crazy version of the American dream. We would make money flipping houses, even though we didn't possess basic handyman skills. Or we quit our jobs and moved to Dubai, where we'd rake in so much dough we could retire early on an unnamed island. Or we'd save just enough money to survive in a hut in some very cheap country until the apocalypse caught up with us. We were working toward an image more than an idea. Rowan and me, framed by two battered suitcases, waving from a car or a boat or a plane, whisking us away from the madness of the world. I never moved beyond that image, failing to imagine what I'd do once we settled into a bamboo hut and battled mosquitoes and strange customs, with no bookstore on the island and no Wi-Fi to download all those books I was finally going to read. Imagining our life beyond the moment we waved goodbye was for later. The important thing was to quit the crazy modern world and its superficial distractions on our own terms.
You have also written three books of fiction. How difficult was the transition from fiction writing to nonfiction?
Much harder than I thought it would be. So this book is so slim, but it's been very hard. You know, it's I've written essays here and there, but I've never been a nonfiction writer. And to be honest, this wouldn't have come about if I hadn't got that grant.
Right.
And I'm glad I did, but it was a real circuitous route. It wasn't like I really want to write a book of nonfiction or anything. And I was a journalism major as an undergrad. So, I mean, I do like interviewing people and there was that aspect of it, but I thought that what I learned in fiction would help me more than it did with the nonfiction.
That's interesting.
I would write really, really, really terrible drafts of these essays. And the difference with my fiction is it's not that it's perfect, but I'm now kind of at the point where I can see, oh, this is a problem. I know how to kind of work through it. And with the nonfiction, I would think everything was great. And someone would read it and it was horrible, and then I, you know, it was like, well, okay, you know, 100 drafts later kind of thing. So I truly was learning a new genre, and I'm still learning. I feel like a beginner in the genre, but it's fun.
I think it's a successful first collection for sure, and we look really forward to hearing from it and from you and hosting you on campus.
I'm really looking forward to it as well. It's going to be a great time.